Well, over the summer, like I said, we've been exploring some of the stuff that's happening, like sometimes hundreds and hundreds of years before Jesus dies on the cross. But it's just such an important thing. God wanted to make sure that everybody understood what was happening so that when Jesus died, everyone would know exactly what was going on, why he died, and what it meant. So all the way through the Old Testament, the part of the Bible that's telling us the story of the church before Jesus comes at Christmas, as it were, there are all these stories and pictures that are there just helping us to know what's happening when Jesus dies, so that when we see it happen, we're like, oh, we totally get what's going on here. And it wasn't that he gave us, I've been saying this all summer, he didn't give us some big book of systematic theology and philosophy and metaphysics and stuff. Just pictures. Pictures. The whole thing is just say what you see. That's all we've been doing all summer. Say what you see. And we've been using dingbats as a way of just kind of illustrating that. Now, I was thinking, people might be getting a bit bored with dingbats over the summer. But then I thought, I'm not going to run the risk of handling that level of disappointment. So all summer we did, just to get us into the idea of just looking at a picture and saying what we see. Because actually, that's a key to reading the Bible. It's the words paint a picture. And if you can see the picture, say what you see, that's it. There's this myth, there's this idea that the Bible's really complicated and only really clever people. It's a load of nonsense, right? If you can use your imagination to see a picture that's being described for you in the Bible, the Bible's literally an open book. Look, it says easy. Okay, here's one. Ready? What's this one? Sorry? High five. Okay. All right, what about this one? No idea. I've got no idea either. Here all day, ladies and gentlemen, here all day. Okay, this one's a little bit trickier. Unfinished business. You got a real gift for this. Either that or you've done a lot of pub quizzes over your time. It's hard to know which. All right. Okay, this one's a little bit controversial. I warn you in advance. A little bit controversial, a little bit politically sensitive maybe. Three wise men. Very good. Thank you very much. Okay. And that's it. If you can play dingbats, you can read the Bible. All right. It's that simple. It's look at the picture. What do you see? When you look at the picture, what do you see? When you look at the picture of the Passover, both the original Passover and then how it is celebrated throughout the history of the ancient church, what do you see? What do you see? And what is that teaching us about the death and the resurrection of Jesus? Well, Richard's going to come and read for us now from Exodus chapter 12, and then we're just going to say what we see. That's what we're going to look at it and say what we see. Thanks, Richard.
Passover and the festival of unleavened bread. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in Egypt, "This month is to be for you the first month of your year. Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb for his family, one for each household. If any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share one with the nearest neighbour, having taken into account the number of people there are. You are to determine the amount of lamb needed in accordance with what each person will eat. The animals you choose must be year-old males without defect, and you may take them from the sheep or the goats. Take care of them until the 14th day of the month, when all the members of the community of Israel must slaughter them at twilight. Then they are to take some of the blood and put it on the sides and tops of the door frames of the houses of the blood, where they eat the lambs. That same night they are to eat the meat roasted over the fire along with bitter herbs and bread made without yeast. Do not eat the meat raw or boiled in water, but roast it over a fire with the head, legs and internal organs. Do not leave any of it till morning. If some is left till morning, you must burn it. This is how you are to eat it, with your cloak tucked into your belt, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. Eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. On that same night, I will pass through Egypt and strike down every firstborn of both people and animals, and I will bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. I am the Lord. The blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you. No destructive plague will touch you when I strike Egypt. This is a day you are to commemorate. For the generations to come, you shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord, a lasting ordinance. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks, Richard.
I don't want you to think that I am making stuff up, or that I'm kind of shoehorning ideas into the Bible that aren't there. We're told over and over again in the New Testament that this is what's going on in the Old Testament.
There are these pictures that are helping us to understand and to make sense of what's going to happen when Jesus dies on the cross. And in fact, even when we are being told that Jesus is dying on the cross, in the Gospels, in the biographies of Jesus, it's being set up as, this is the Passover. All right, so it's, right, as you know, said Jesus, the Passover is 2 days away, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. Right, Jesus has orchestrated this very deliberately so that he will be crucified during the celebration of the Passover. It's like, this is what it's all about. Okay? And the Passover meal, the meal that Richard's just been reading about that is going to be used to celebrate the Passover and remember the Passover all through the generations of the ancient church. That's the meal that Jesus takes and kind of recalibrates into what we now have as Holy Communion, the Lord's Supper that we're going to celebrate in just a few moments. This is kind of Jesus' reinventing, if you like, or fulfilling and reestablishing this in the heart of Christian worship as a way of remembering his Passover. All right, so that it's in that meal that Jesus takes the bread and breaks it and gives it to his disciples saying, this is my body. And it's the cup that was used, the cup of wine that was used to remember the blood that was painted on the door frame. That's the cup. That's the blood that Jesus actually says, actually, that's my blood. That's my blood. What you saw the blood do in the ancient Passover, that's what my blood will do for you. All right? It's that simple. That's how Jesus teaches us to understand the Passover and how we understand his death. And the apostles all understood this. So all the apostles, like Paul, 1 Corinthians 5, talks about Christ as our Passover lamb. All right? It's like, that's it. That's what it's about. Peter talks about Jesus as the lamb. Again, talking about the blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect, which is, of course, the way that the Passover lamb was described in the book of Exodus. And in the book of Revelation at the end, when over and over again we're seeing kind of Jesus as the foundation and the meaning and the purpose of all of history, and again he is presented to us as the lamb who was slain. All the way through, Jesus is being, we're told, the Passover lamb. Get what's going on with the Passover lamb, and you will get what is going on with the death of Jesus. All right? And it's not just a prophecy that Jesus is going to die and rise again. Okay? It is that. It is saying that Jesus is going to die as a sacrifice, as a substitute, and his blood is going to protect you from judgment. Okay? But it's a little bit more going on than that. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but as we've gone through the series, there's always this question, what happens next? It's not just Jesus is going to die and be raised again. Oh, he is. But in a way, so what? What's that mean? What happens next?
What's the significance of it? And we're often told that in the story as well. So do you remember a few weeks back we were looking at that weird story about the snakes in the desert? And how, you know, and how Jesus, when he is lifted up, when Jesus dies on the cross, what does his death and resurrection mean? It means that even while we are living in this world that is cursed, that is this wilderness, that with the snake, the serpent, still kind of afflicting us, and his poison, as it were, still in our blood, even in this world, we can have life. We can live by looking to Christ. That was the. But what about this one? Do you remember Abraham, the father who offers his own son as a sacrifice? What was that all about? Well, then there was the covenant that through your son, there will be a blessing to the nations. All right? Or Daniel, just a couple of weeks ago. Do you remember there was the death and the resurrection? And what did that mean? It meant the end of exile. God's people are coming home. That's what the death of Jesus brings about. Or last week, the death and resurrection of Jonah. And remember, the church goes to the nations of the world. All right? And it's like, what is the death? What's going to happen when Jesus dies and rises again? The church is going to infect, as it were, the nations of the world. It's going to go global. It's not going to be confined to one little nation at the east end of the Mediterranean. All right? It's going to, every nation is going to have the church in it. So, what about Passover? All right? What is going on with Passover? What are we being taught here that the death and the resurrection of Jesus means? Well, we know it means judgment on the powers and the principalities. We heard that in the story. But I'm going to suggest to you that Passover, one of the things that the death and the resurrection of Jesus means is, and we learn this from Passover, that we are freed for holiness. We are liberated in order to become the people God created us to be. I think that's what we're being taught in the story of the Passover. You see, in our heads, the story of Exodus stops at the other end of the Red Sea. Right? That's it. If I was like, that's where we stop the story. And you know what? This is an important point in the story. I'm not going to knock it. Okay? There's this incredible story of deliverance. The people of God have been enslaved. They've been living under the fear of death. They've been living under the tyranny of Pharaoh. And John 8, Jesus tells us this is a great picture of what people are like, what we are like before we become Christians. We are enslaved. Jesus uses the same line. He talks about us being enslaved to sin. That we live under the tyranny of the devil. And we live in fear of death. And one of the things that the Passover does, the death of the Passover lamb, is that when all of that is being judged, the church is protected from that judgment and is delivered out of it. So that we become free. We're no longer enslaved to sin. We're no longer under the tyranny of Satan. And we do not any longer need to live in the fear of death. But in God's mind, that's not where the story stops. In God's mind, the story isn't over when the people get to the other side of the Red Sea. See, right at the start of the story, right, when Moses is speaking to God at the burning bush, God says this, I will be with you. This will be the sign to you that it is I that have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. And that mountain is Sinai. That's where the burning bush happened. And so in God's head, the story of the Passover doesn't finish until Moses is worshiping God again on Sinai. And of course, when Moses goes back to Sinai and is worshiping God again on Sinai,
What does he get from God? So, go on, have courage. Take courage, my friend. The Ten Commandments. Yeah, he receives the Ten Commandments. So in God's head, God, in our mind, the story often finishes at the Red Sea. In God's mind, the story doesn't finish until he has given this vision of how he wants his people to live. See, it's not just that we are freed from slavery to sin, but we are freed in order to become the people God created us to be. Right? He died to make us holy. Peter, who we saw earlier talking about Jesus as the Passover lamb, goes on to say this. It's interesting. This is how the apostles work this out, you see. Live as free people. Right? You're the Passover people. Through the death of the Passover lamb, you've been brought out from slavery to sin. You've been brought out from under the tyranny of Pharaoh. You've been brought out from under the fear of death. You're free. You're free people. But, he says, but don't use your freedom as a cover up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Right? Come out now and see God as the one who has the authority to tell you how to live. It's not just, okay, you're free, end of story. It's like, free to do what? You're free now to become the people God has called you to be. See, if I asked you, why did Jesus die? If you said, he died to save me from my sins, I'd give you about 20% on an exam question if you said that. 20%. Maybe 15, 20% if I was feeling generous. Right? Because it's true. But oh my goodness, it is so inadequate. It's only one tiny part of the answer. Why did Jesus die? Well, if you know the story of Passover, you know the next part of the answer at least. Why did Jesus die? So that I could become the person God created me to be. Why did Jesus die? Oh, to save me from my sins. Yes. And so that you could learn to be holy. So that you could learn to live the way God called you to live. To have your love ordered properly. Alright, so you get this picture. It's not just, okay, we're out of Egypt. We're also at Sinai, worshiping and learning how to live the way God created us to live. A Christian who's not really bothered, who isn't working hard at becoming the person God created them to be, doesn't understand the cross. I'm being blunt about that. The death of Jesus is about making you holy. It's about changing you so that you become the person God created you to be. One of my favorite, one of the first verses in the Bible I ever memorized was from the book of Titus, chapter 2. And it said this, Jesus Christ gave himself to redeem us from all wickedness and to purify for himself a people who are his very own, eager to do what is good. See the same thing. Redeems us from all wickedness and purifies us and changes us so that we become those who are eager to do good. It's why, over the last few years, we've been working really hard at MIE, amongst other things, the discipleship training program on Tuesday evenings, to help people to begin to get a vision of exactly how is it God has called me to live. What kind of person has he called me to be? And it's not just about developing our understanding. It's not just about enriching our vision. It's not just about expanding our sense of what God has called us to be. It's about actually asking, how do we become that person? How do we become that person? And how can we support one another as we grow to become those people? Because that is what it means to be a Passover people. That is what it means when Jesus, as our Passover lamb, died for us. And if you go back 1,500 years, everyone would have done discipleship training. Before you were even allowed to join the church, you had to do discipleship training for 3 years. And the Ten Commandments was a big part of the syllabus, because that was still seen, and is still seen, as kind of mapping out, sketching out for us the structure of the kind of life and character that God calls us to have. It's like a description of the character of Jesus. But we're all age, we're keeping things short, so I'm not going to develop that too much for you this morning. But it is still the framework of how we live. It is still the portrait of love. Remember? Remember where we started our service? With Jesus teaching us? How would you even summarize the Ten Commandments? Well, Jesus was very clear. It's like this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is the only Lord. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. The second is this: love your neighbor as yourself. There's no other commandment greater than these. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Right, so if you're somebody whose loves are ordered in the right way, you will be someone who is living the Ten Commandments. That's what Jesus, your Passover lamb, died to put on the table as a live option and as a real possibility. And so together we say, Amen. Lord, have mercy. Right, well, there's lots we need to do off the back of something like that. The first thing we need to do is pray about it. So Ken's going to come and lead us in prayer, and then we're going to celebrate communion. Jesus' recalibration of the Passover meal. We're going to celebrate that together here this morning. Thanks, Ken.